Hello, and welcome to AMO Kenzoku. We are a group of four Bubblegum Crisis Boomer Otaku who wanted an excuse to talk about anime, manga, and any related subjects we find interesting. The Kenzoku are...
I'm Dylan.
Hello, I'm Nick.
Hey, all, I'm Mike.
And I'm Sam. This episode is being recorded on January 9th, 2025, and this is episode 64-bit. This episode, we are discussing the old 90s OVA Golden Boy. If you're our age, oh, I gotta say, Hashin. There, now we can start. So Golden Boy, this thing came out in Japan, is an OVA, six-episode OVA, released in the first one, according to Wikipedia, October 27th, 1995, and the last one, June 28th, 1996.
So it almost exactly overlapped with the release of Eva.
Oh, really?
Wow, I didn't even think that this and Eva are the same age. That actually blew my mind.
First Eva episode aired on October 4th, 95. And it finished airing on March 27th. So the final episode of Golden Boy was a little bit after, but basically ran over the same time period. Pretty much the same story, wow. Too.
Yeah, almost
identical. Almost.
They both have the Gainax bounce of sorts. So yeah, this was based on a manga by Tatsuya Egawa, a manga of the same name. The anime was directed by Hiroyuki Kitakubo, who was a longtime key animator, still is, and he's also director of Blood the Last Vampire, which is probably his most famous one, Black Magic M66, which I still haven't seen, Robot Carnival, and Rogen Z, which I really need to see that. I keep meaning to try and find it and watch it, but I always forget about this thing.
Hey, don't forget. He also directed Cream Lemon Part 4.
I was going to say he was one of the Cream Lemon. Yeah, director, scenario, did and everything for Pop Chaser, which I think is one of the good ones.
Is one of the most famous ones. It's one of the titles I actually have heard of. So
Oh, nice. I probably didn't pick that one up because I was looking for series directors. So,
fair. But
yeah, that's important.
Let's see.
Mike?
I assume only part of Robot Carnival. So which part? A Tale of Two Robots, whichever part that was. Interesting.
Looks like he was just credited as director on ANN, at least, that I was looking at. But I could have read that wrong, too.
ANN corrects him as director of one of the shorts on Robot Carnival, A Tale of Two Robots, which...
Oh, okay. Oh, I read that as just a subtitle of Robot Carnival. I obviously haven't watched Robot Carnival, so...
Yeah, it's one of Otomo's anthology movies.
Okay, so... character design, animation direction by Toshihiro Kawamoto of Cowboy Bebop fame. You can really tell in the opening, I think.
Definitely agreed, yes.
And some of the funny expressions, honestly, feel very Kawamoto.
Oh, okay.
Just, like, it's definitely way more 90s crazy expressions, but thinking back to Bebop, there's certainly some of that in there. Just not as much because of the character designs.
Yeah, you know, I guess to kind of riff off of that, when I was watching this, the facial expressions... And just the general kind of theme of the show of, I mean, I guess I'll just say it's just about a guy who's, we're going to spoil it. There's nothing worth being spoiled over in this show, but like.
Maybe F6 might be the only ep that's worth not spoiling, but I generally agree. Yes.
Yeah. So if for some reason you're worried about the plot of Golden Boy being spoiled, go watch the six episodes right now or not. And just listen to us spoil it. But watching that the general theme of like he's a freeder, the guy just goes around getting like part time jobs, and the backstory of him is he's just like he's a college dropout, he's a legal school dropout, but he didn't drop out because he couldn't handle it. He dropped out because he just learned everything already. And he's just like a super genius that is able to learn anything.
And he just dropped out of Todai, which is kind of a big deal. It's the equivalent of dropping out of, like, Harvard Law.
Basically.
Yeah. Right, yeah. Yeah. And then he just goes around, like, oogling women at various jobs, and that's kind of, like, the plot. And then he, like, loses the job or leaves the job as soon as he's mastered it. And then the women are falling for him just as he leaves, and he doesn't get to see them fall for him. But seeing his facial expressions throughout this thing, and again, the general plot of it, where he's like, kind of this, he wants the girls, but he's just still like tries to be hard to be a gentleman. It really reminded me of GTO. I don't know if you guys were also getting that vibe from it.
I would say that's probably the closest character to compare Kintaro to is Onizuka. Yeah, I would totally agree there.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about Onizuka in a while, but although, yeah, he's kind of a dirtbag, a golden-hearted dirtbag, kind of.
Yeah, yeah, that's a really great way to describe it. Yeah, like he is scum with a capital S, but he also has a heart of gold. So,
yeah,
and yeah, we also know he is clearly much more perceptive and observant than he lets on. The one time that someone actually checks out what he's been writing in the journal the whole time.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of interesting too. With the politician's daughter one.
Yeah, yeah. Episode 2, I think.
Yeah.
Speaking of, I gotta say, EP2 was a mighty hurdle for me to clear.
Yeah, like, the whole show really.
Well, 2 was, in my opinion, the hardest. I think it got easier after. I think 2 was probably the most challenging for me content wise, and then afterwards it was more palatable, I'd say.
One of the things
I do want to talk more about that. I want to just finish one more thought about the GTO connection. I looked into this because I was curious about, like, they had to have been vaguely around the same time, so I figured somebody had to have influenced the other because they were both really big properties. And it turns out that Toru Fujisawa, the mangaka for GTO, was actually an assistant of Egawa's.
Oh.
Huh.
Yeah.
Huh.
And I thought that GTO actually came out about the same time as the Golden Boy anime. And I had thought, like, the influence was between, like, Golden Boy and GTO, but really the influence is his Egawa's first manga. I already forget the title of it, but it's basically the exact same plot as GTO, where it's like this teacher who goes and tries to, you know, reform these high school students and the skeevy guy with the heart of gold kind of thing. And apparently, don't take this as gospel. I'm just getting this kind of art of stuff from ANN. Like, Egawa was really peeved about this at some later point. And, like, say, you know, I think he even maybe sued about him stealing his ideas. And I guess Fujisawa acknowledged that he stole it, but he's like, it's okay because I was working on that manga at the same time because he was an assistant on it. So I thought that was an interesting twist.
That manga is Be Free. Just a quick ANN. It started in 84, ran 12 tankobons. It was the first one by Tatsuya Egawa. Their plot summary on ANN is a semi-autobiographical manga about an unconventional high school teacher, Sasa Nishiki, who dares to befriend his students and teach them life lessons about love, friendship, sex, violence, justice, evil, philosophy, and how things really are.
If you gave me that description without the title, I would just say you just described GTO. So maybe there is merit to his grievances.
Random, just because the person is very famous on there as well, like listed the only one who's listed as an assistant on here, and obviously it should have the other person did GTO on there is as an assistant on that. Yeah, it's Kosuke Fujishima, which is like... Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
When you look at certain design elements, it doesn't surprise me at all. It's because when I started watching the opening, I'm like, this reminds me so much of Fujishima and I did. I'm like, oh, that makes sense, Fujishima.
Oh, yeah.
Assistants, so.
Yeah, the OP does feel very Fujishima, yeah. I was actually thinking about the You're Under Arrest opening for the OVA
I felt was UA vibes. Oh. Big UA vibes.
And the other thing that I noticed was it was another Kawamoto thing that had... We can have our debate on opening, whatever, there, but what? But at least it's a vocal-less opening.
Oh, yeah.
That's another Kawamoto thing. And it was, frankly, at the same time, it's not like that. I feel like some of those things happen a little bit more. Not that much, though. But, you know, the other, obviously, the most famous, you know, non-vocal opening is Tank. But even that one has a little bit of vocal in the beginning of the with the spoken word stuff.
Mm. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Just a little bit.
3-2, one less jam.
Yeah.
Yeah, that opening is actually really, really good.
Yeah.
What struck me when I was watching it was the first, when I originally watched this way back when, I read the opening straight, as in like, look at this guy, he's so cool. But I watch it now and I'm like, oh, they're making fun of him, I think. Like, making this bike look like you would a car, you know, with like the whole glint off it. He's got a garage for his bike, like puts on his cool guy sunglasses and then he just pedals the heck out of there.
Yeah, it's like, it's like a Initial D opening or something, except rather than revving up like the super Lamborghini that he literally gets run over by in the beginning of the first episode. He's like, oh man, I'm gonna crank it on my crescent moon.
Yeah, but you could read it both ways.
I think the opening is really, I love it. I think it's great. Like, it's really, the animation throughout the whole opening is really stellar, good cuts, nicely done. It's a super catchy song that, like, you hear, and it's just, like, it's an earworm. You're just like, oh, now especially I'm just going to have this playing in my background forever.
That looping guitar riff, it's like, yeah, ultimate earworm.
Yeah.
And especially for being, you know, when it was mid-90s, I think, at least my opinion, is that the fade-in at the end with the Golden Boy done is, like, a CG thing that actually looks, I think it looks really nice.
Oh, yeah.
It's a good effect. The way the letters kind of like zoom in and then spin off, like it comes in and it looks, it like even looking at it now, you're like, yeah, that looks nice. Like it doesn't look like it's some random fire from what's the CG? Independence Day, which I think was the same year where the CGI fire in that movie.
Another element of the opening I really loved and I think is a completely almost dead art is they let the animation be animation and the credits be credits. They don't merge the two. Like, they just interweave black screen, white text with names, at least for the subtitled version on Crunchyroll, and then they just show a really nice, clean animation cut for a few seconds, and they just alternate back and forth, and I feel like that's a lost art. I think in the modern era, there's some cool stuff going on with openings, but most of it is just your opening with the standard overlaid, right? Staff stuff now, which is fine. That's the norm. I'm not saying everybody has to try to reinvent the wheel, but I do certainly loves me some uninterrupted, just great, clean art and animation to just, you know, admire.
Yeah. I mean, it's stylistically, it's also nice because it gives each little cut time to breathe. Adds a little bit of impact instead of just quick cutting between stuff.
Yeah, I wonder if it's something where they're like, oh, we have this here. We're like, how do we cut between these? Like, what do you do, a weird jump cut thing? And probably someone was like, what if we just put a credit in there? They're like, oh, let's wait. That works. Let's do that.
Yeah. That when I heard watch the opening and hear that, the guitar riff starting, it's like, oh, man, that is just so nostalgic, too.
Yeah. It's like that for me. It's like my version of the meme you see of, like, you know, you wake up and it's you're back in 1998, like the last 25 years of the bad dream. I'm like, I get that big feels when I hear that opening riff.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting too that there's no end credit at all.
So oh, yeah. I was looking into that. An end credit song was recorded, but for some reason it either didn't make it on a US release or it never actually made it. But there is a recorded song called, one moment, I have the title here.
Yeah.
Gintama.
Study a Go-Go is what it's called.
That sounds and so it's dumb.
It's basically like an ensemble cast. It's like basically a group song done by the main female VAs of each episode, basically.
Oh, wait, which are called Golden Girls. that's what it says on ANN, at least. So I think that's great.
That's fabulous.
I generally don't like those kind of things, that ensembles by the VAs.
Really?
Personally.
I don't know. I mean, Rama has kind of made me attached to that. So
yeah, I can't not think of that. But at the same, there's so many of them. But it's also one of those things where it depends how many and how good they are. Like,
yeah,
because you could be like, because I could matters. Point back to the winner yeah. for the runaway winner for best ending from last year's Kenzoki's of Megumin TV, which was yeah. the main two VAs.
True,
sure, right.
So it's like sometimes it works out well, and other times you're just like, eh, it's okay, it's fine. But they do it a lot of the time.
Yeah.
So
I guess it's okay.
Back to this show. So opening plus.
Yes. That's what we're starting out good.
We're starting out high note. We're starting out high note. Like the opening is pretty awesome. I would honestly recommend to anyone, like, you want to see a great opening, just watch this. It's awesome. So the show itself, I'll just go full ham on my opinions here and we can debate whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I liked it quite a bit. I think see why at the particularly at the time too, like I can see why it was like really popular. Presumably, I don't actually know about Japan, but at least in the US it was like, it was popular, and it was definitely a little bit of this kind of like, not quite softcore porn, but you know, like yeah. just under the line there.
I don't know. BMO Baby was softcore porn.
Yeah,
yeah, that one. Yeah, BMO Baby pushed it slightly over the line. The
don't
rest
get me
of them were
probably
were
the
like...
most legendary ep of the OVA. In
certainly,
my
yeah. The one that I saw first, I can't even remember if that was After Hours, Summer, or a Dinner Break, or what.
Not a dinner break, no way.
I'm assuming not a dinner break.
it's definitely one that you wouldn't recommend just to like to anyone or whatever. But I think mm-hmm. within the taking that into mind, like it's a thing I'd be like, you know what, honestly, it's a pretty good series, I think. I think Kintaro is actually the VA does a great job for him, and it's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. It's entirely ridiculous, and I'll go into things yes. that are ridiculous there too. But I'd say, like overall, actually, I'd be like, you know what, it's good. And part of the thing I think that makes it good is it's 6 episodes only, and they're 25 minutes, so yeah. it doesn't let you sit in one of those things and really start being like, oh gosh, this is really getting like super weird and crazy.
Except Ep 2. Let's be real. Ep 2 did yeah. a lot more, leaned a lot harder into the,
yes.
the creepy kind of too far line for me.
Yes. That's fine. I don't disagree at all. Like, there's definitely stuff where you're like, oh man, this is like, you definitely got to look over your shoulder and be like, all right, where am I watching this? Okay, let's use caution.
It's not
okay.
an airplane watch.
Not danger the airplane's first watch, yeah. But with that said, I think it was, I enjoyed it much more, I think, than I was expecting to, watching it so many years later. I was expecting kind of be like, all right, this is terrible, I would never watch this again. But having watched it, I'd be like, am I going to watch it all the time? No. But I wasn't upset that I watched it. It was, like, way better mm-hmm. than, like, like when I tried to rewatch like El Hazard, and I was like, oh god, this is not good. Why would we think this was good? I'm like, you know what? Yes, it's over the top and ridiculous, but it also doesn't ever claim to not be that. So
I feel like that's an interesting perspective. I think maybe you've raised my retrospective opinion a little bit. And my opinion at the end of watching these was that it was okay. Plot-wise, it's very thin and a lot of kind of cliche stuff. However,
even acknowledges that at some points in Breaking the Fourth Wall.
Mm-hmm.
True. But I was never bored with it. So I think that puts it a little bit above, like, if you can be cliche on all these, you can keep me kind of watching. I didn't like how pervy it got at times. You know, I don't have a problem with that stuff generally, but like, I don't know. I got,
there's levels to it, right? Like,
there's
levels to it.
Licking the toilets and stuff.
Well,
is,
yeah, I didn't realize they pulled that gag for basically every episode. I'm like, okay, yeah. This is by the last one. I'm like, okay, guys, I get it. Let's stop it, please. Like,
yeah, I actually had the same thought too. I was like, holy cow, they're doing this every episode, literally.
I didn't remember anything other than like that was, I didn't remember much of about the show other than like, there's something, he's on a bike, and I remember there's the toilet licking. Like, that's what I remember.
The first episode.
Yeah, I very much remembered it from the first episode. I carved a pumpkin, not that one.
Yeah, that's my main memory of it, is Mike's pumpkin. But the fact that he did it basically, I think he did it for 5 of the 6. I can't recall if he did it for the swimming episode or not.
Oh, yeah, definitely did. Yep.
Did he? Okay.
He did.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, not surprising. But, I don't know. Were you still finishing your evaluation,
no,
Sam?
I mean, go carry on. I mean, can I always interject more stuff?
Okay, go ahead.
I will just interrupt with the thing that I think is actually pretty interesting is the manga author who's done apparently a ton of stuff, just not a bunch of stuff that's been out in the U.S. He also wrote the screenplay for it. So he was heavily involved in the series, so it's not like this is
voice.
and he voiced himself as well.
I
remember reading an interview, he even admitted that he actually toned down the lasciviousness of the content compared to the manga, because the manga gets borderline pornographic pretty much away.
It's probably so. Well over the line.
Yeah, so he even, but, and you know, so I don't know, this will, I'll just segue this into my evaluation of it. Like, it's, this, Golden Boy is like all sorts of extremes for me. In, on the plus side, it represents a lot of stuff that I truly, truly adore about the 90s, specifically the design philosophy of the characters. Just, in my opinion, this is like peak character design, you know. I mean, in general, but obviously Kawamoto is excellent, right, and still is, but this is like just like chef's kiss. It's aged like fine wine. All the characters look, they exude character, like they're icono looking without having some sort of weird quirk about them, just very specific design philosophies, you know. Animation obviously is fantastic. Like, one thing I miss about OVAs is just they can, you know, put a lot of effort and time into each individual episode and get a really, really refined product, right? Opening, obviously elite, but then like just at times, like some episodes in my opinion were totally fine on the level of, you know, the lewdness of the content. I think it was like, you know, I would say a tolerable level. I think ep one is okay. Ep two took to me about 7 steps too far. Primarily due to just like who the female lead was as well, and then BMO Baby is tough because that's probably my favorite episode, and
but it's also so...
quite possibly the most pornographic, and for that one scene, I'm like, jeez. Like, if he just
gives
cut
the
that
mecha
part out,
animators the most to do.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I mean. But it also just got the most, like, off, went up the most, you know, completely off the rails, because, like, come on, you cannot bicycle on power wires, and he fell, like, what, like, 400 feet and lived,
oh, it's
like,
so okay. Good, the, yeah, this, the storyboarding everything in that whole
for
segment
sure, for
is
sure.
So
you can,
great.
I can already hear the meaning, like, hey, guys, let's just do something completely bonkers for this episode, and then they achieved it, and it was a fantastic episode, don't get me wrong, but just, yeah, the BMO baby portion would just definitely, definitely see yeah. Egawa's heavy influence there. But so yeah, like I as Dylan was saying, like I do at the end of the day, I'm glad I rewatched it. I do agree, Sam. The plot is paper thin at mm-hmm. best, but yeah. Man, the character designs really do carry for me. Like just individual stills of keyframes in this are so good.
Oh like, yeah.
Oh my goodness. And then just the, yeah, the clothing design, I absolutely loved. The cut in the final, in EP6 when they're all in the movie theater and how, you know, it kind of pans across all of the female yeah. leads and how each one's very, I'm like, oh my God, this is everything about the 90s that I absolutely loved.
Oh. And it's so great because, like, you're talking about how good the character designs are. When it pans across these characters, you'll see them for, like, a few frames. And you, even though you've seen these characters for one episode, you're instantly like, oh, there's that person from mm-hmm. that episode. There's mm-hmm. that person from that mm-hmm. episode. Like, you totally know who they are. There's no, like, who is that? Like, it's
yeah,
so great.
That's a good point. I think that, is that the kind of, one of the points of, yeah, these characters are very distinct that you could probably... You know, if you were put in the show, you could probably pick them out. Maybe you wouldn't have their name. You'd be like, oh, that's a swimming person. Oh, yeah, that's the one from this. Yeah, that's one from that. Exactly. From just, like, a silhouette. From, yeah, someone you've only seen on screen for maybe 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was really, really well, like, constructed. Like, what's the word? Technically, on a technical level, it's pretty good. Yeah, well executed, I guess maybe is the better way to say.
It's like you have this versus, what am I thinking of? Like, what's it? Nurse Angel Ririka SOS or whatever?
Oh, goodness.
Where it's like, yeah. You could almost be like, I can barely remember, but I think it's something, it was a similar, like, sixth episode OVA, but it was not executed well, and we are not doing an AMO on it. We're not going to do hate watch AMO on that.
That was, it's totally like, this is an example of fan service. I won't say done well, but like done in a way where the show is more than just the fan service, like because they put a lot of effort into other things, whereas like Nanako is just, it's literally just fan service and nothing is done well outside, like the fan service isn't even done well on that.
Right
Like I would actually watch this with someone I thought would be cool with it just because it's worth seeing.
Yeah. The
and there aren't many ecchi shows I would say that about.
That's exactly, I think you hit the nail on the head, Mike. It's this is definitely worth seeing as long as you can tolerate the content. It's definitely worth a watch. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, this is one that Sakuga fans, like animation fans, will post, you know, GIFs of clips from this show because there's so much good animation in it.
Yeah,
you know,
just, and honestly, I forgot really how close this was to Bebop in timeline, because when I'm looking at it now, especially looking at stills, like you can see so many, in my opinion, design influences that directly went into Bebop. Like there's a couple of cuts with the BMO baby girl Reiko where she's in the kimono, mm-hmm. and literally if you just cut out her face and please, and you ask like a random, hey, what characters? Most people say, oh, that's Faye Valentine in the app when she put up her hair and went to that like show. F5 when she runs into Vicious, like it looks exactly like her, and I'm like, oh my gosh, like you can just see where Kawamoto's, you know, design philosophies for Bebop were conceived in some ways. I would say from this, you look at other characters and be like, oh, that totally looks like XYZ character from Bebop, you know, mm-hmm. the hair style or, you know, certain, again, just little details. But yeah, just the keyframes for this, I could look at them forever, honestly.
Yeah.
Like there's so many good ones.
It'd be great to have some cells of this.
Kawamoto and Bebop, the very fan service-y way that Faye was introduced really calls back to this.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, that's true. So Beemo Baby was definitely a fantastic episode, also one of the more pervy episodes. One of the things I love about this show, aside from like just the kind of audacity of the motorcycle versus bike race, the gag that basically it leaves you with at the end, like there are several moments in this show where I'm watching it and I did laugh out loud at some of these gags, that they were so well timed and placed, and the him at the end being like, I have no brakes, like I laughed at that because it was so funny. It's like, oh, you're not just like not just a horn dog, but like you were kind of stupid and then you couldn't stop, and so to keep yourself from dying you had to keep going, right? Like, I just love that.
It's like very philosophical with his stuff.
Yeah.
And the title of that episode in Japanese is the no break no seishun, like English of no break youth.
Yeah.
that was
a good one. What were you guys, it seems like none of us generally liked episode 2. Episode 1, I really liked this one. This was one of my favorites as well. Just, I guess, maybe because I'm biased because I'm a programmer. I don't know how the other programmers here
yeah.
feel about it. Yeah, Mike, how did you like this one?
Always been a fan of it.
It's such a great, it's such a great first step. It sets the pace really well.
Yeah. I just hope no cloud data cert enter hires Kintaro.
Yeah. I mean, those days, right? Like, a computer under a desk was a server, right? Like, So that was just...
But what sort of irresponsible, like, head programmer doesn't, like, save when they walk away from their workstation,
that
right?
That part was so, like, I don't believe that at all, but... I mean, back in those days too, you did have to worry about, you know, hard drives dying if you just unplugged your computer.
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, for sure.
So like, it was fun seeing references. Like anytime I see programming stuff in anime, like, I see code scroll across the screen or anything like that, I always try and like pause and look at it. It was interesting to see. I think that the server was actually a Sun Spark Station.
Mm-hmm. I think there was some indication that it was a Sun, Spark in there.
Yeah,
and that's the other thing I really liked about the OVO. Again, and OVOs from the Saturn Journal is just the detail you see going in with a fine tooth comb for the little things, like you said, the warp station, and then for the swimming app, like that when he hears that the head instructor won gold at the Olympics, and you see that pan of a gold medal. I paused there, and it actually was the imprint of the 92 gold medal from Barcelona. Oh. Huh. So like they even went through that detail. So sorry, Mike. I didn't mean to cut you off.
I was thinking that by 96, hard drives would probably have been self-parking, but at the least you could have done a real number on the file system.
Well, and you also have to think that, like...
And the manga was probably written well before 96, yeah.
Yeah, so, like, it was that part is believable. The didn't save is not believable, but I could still believe you can lose the data a different way, so I kind of let that slide. But Oh, go ahead.
And Kintaro teaching himself basic on his fake computer out in his homeless camp.
On the cart.
That was awesome.
Yeah.
That's the thing about this show. You can think back to, like, there's scenes and stuff where you're like, okay, this is, I didn't like that. But there's some scenes like that you're just like, oh my god, it's hilarious.
There are just some absolutely gif-able moments in this show.
Oh, yeah.
The thing I did not like about episode 1, myself also being one of the software developer people on this podcast, is the fact that he teaches himself and makes a better UX and experience and everything in a week than an entire team of people. And it's one of those things, too, where I think... part of it is like, yes, it's just a ridiculous show, but it's also one of those things that's so very like it today. It also comes off as like a little kind of like, I don't know. It's like, oh, so what do you have? You have some man who's literally never done anything in this language or anything here. And he shows up and in a week makes a better thing than this entire team of women software developers.
Yeah.
It's actually, very musky.
You bring up a great point because, yeah, on the flip side, right? Like one thing I think the OVAs do a really great job of is portraying all the female leads as incredibly capable, right? And not just like, you know, intellectually, but you know, in the whatever discipline, right? You have the gold medal winning swimmer, you have the, you know, genius programmer CEO bombshell, you have, you know, the diligent daughter who's just trying to help out her family, like all these different elements, or all these, I would say, you know, strong female leads in the sense that they're all, you know, strong individuals who are, you know, excelling in their area. But then, as you said, Dylan, then in comes Kintaro and just kind of botches things up and then manages to clean it up and make everything better than it was when he arrived. I'm like, really? I don't know. But
I mean, it is kind of his.
It like is the that whole is story, his, though, that so. Is his gimmick, and I get that.
He is 100% a Marty Stew.
What's that?
The male equivalent of a Mary Sue.
At the same time, in the swimming episode, he doesn't actually beat her in a swimming race. He loses his mind and gets super perv speed for 30 seconds. But he doesn't actually win at the swimming. He goes away. What he kind of, you know, went at was like, hey, actually, he thought about the actual people and what it meant and did something better there that everyone else was like, oh, this is a good idea. Let's do that. So in that way, it was kind of good. It wasn't like, oh, he actually figured out how to like, and he could just swim better than a gold medal swimmer. It was like, well, no.
That's true. Yeah. When I was watching it, I was like, wow, is he really going to get faster than her? And he's actually going to beat her in a race. I don't remember that. And it's like, oh yeah, he doesn't actually.
And then of course the next episode they do Beam a Baby and he beats a motorcycle on a bicycle. So, you know.
Yeah. But by cheating, right? Like
yeah,
which is the fun thing.
Yeah, and literally defying all the laws of physics and
yes,
and all of that. But again, that I think that was the point of the episode. I don't think there was any supposition that this was all going to be, you know, grounded in reality. So.
Yeah. One of the other things that I loved from the first episode was there are two really great visual gags that I laughed at. One was the pervy gag where she spits on him and then he moves and catches it. It's like, oh my god,
it's
so good.
And it's just like, it's cut, like, it's not even like animated well except for the spit. Like, his mouth's already open and he's just sitting there waiting for it. Like, just something about that. And then he proceeds to literally get curb stomped nearly to death, which... I would say that is the area to show that I enjoy is when they take something a little lewd, but they spin it into a gag. I think that's fine. I just, again, certain episodes take it a few notches too far for sure. But in general, I think I was more, I could understand most of it was lighthearted.
They definitely seem to have fun drawing beat up Kintaro.
Sure did.
Yeah, they did do that a lot. I didn't like that. Looking at that, that was very definitely ugly, but you know, I'm sure that was the good point. I also liked the gag where the Yakuza guys are threatening that the old man, and he gets all like, starts walking confidently toward them with like the mean face, and then he turns the corner into the alley
to take his notes.
Yeah, to take notes.
It's like, oh, I'm learning a lot here.
Just another one of those cases, right, where they turn up the animation really high, so you're like, oh man, what's gonna happen? And then like absolutely nothing.
And that's really what another thing I really loved about this series was they just animated it well because they want to animate it well, not because there were elaborate fight scenes or elaborate action scenes. Don't get me wrong, BMO Baby like race scene was great. Like,
oh, yeah,
that gave me big time nostalgia for Iwa. But in general, just, you know, it's mostly mundane stuff happening. Minus like BMO Baby again, but but that just regular things, like again, him walking up, it was just animated so well. And I think that's something that I really appreciate about OVAs from the 90s is just this just raw effort and output to get. I mean, I feel like Ep 6 is really a microcosm of the industry as a whole. Yes. In this era where you had incredibly talented people and really motivated people that were literally shortening their lifespans to output a great product. And, you know, I don't necessarily support it, but I definitely appreciate it.
That was actually, I did want to talk about Ep 6 because it was interesting from a lot of different angles. One of them being that I thought it did an excellent job of tying up the OVA, like all the different story threads together. I mean, in a quick way, but it was a nice a kind of to touch back and reference all the other characters and bring them in and give them a part to play. I thought that was cool. But the other part that I liked was this thing that we've that we all love here at AMO is the anime about making anime. And
oh yes,
it, in each one of them, like they're all made at like different times in the industry, and this one is made at a particular time in the industry where they do things a certain way. That like obviously it's not really in detail about it, but you know that. The people animating this and working on it are in the industry. So like it's going to be somewhat representative of how it really was. And I always think that's really neat to see. Like some of those jobs don't exist anymore. Or at least not in that form, like photography. They got the guy at the big machine photographing cells.
I mean, cells in general, anymore. Right? Everything's digital.
Yeah. Cells in general. Yeah.
Everything's done on like Cintiqs or whatever. So.
Cutting in on that, because I think that episode was cool. The part where I was like, oh man, you're gonna get yourself in so much trouble, where Kentaro goes to clean up the animator's desk.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Mm-hmm. And I was like,
with the real photo of a desk.
I was right. Those were literally just real desk photos that they interjected in there. Did they do any treatment on it? Or it was just like, no, we're just taking a picture of Kawamoto's desk and we're just shoving it in here.
It looked like it's a real picture. I didn't notice any kind of.
Okay. I thought so too, but it also was like, it was so nicely done in there that you were almost like halfway like, that's a real photo, right? And then it goes back into the animation, and the animation part was done so nicely and cleanly that you almost kind of like, it didn't feel like a jarring break.
Yeah, it was fit
just
well.
Yeah, it just fit well, which is hard to do.
Yeah. For reals.
And then it turned out it was like the big burly guys, and it just does the quick gag clip of don't touch my stuff, and he just decks him into the trash can.
Yeah, because he's like, I don't know where anything is.
Exactly.
He cleaned it up.
And I truly relate to that, but I am also an advocate of organization by chaos. I am literally, that desk is literally what I'm surrounded in right now in my office. So.
Yep. Same here. Yeah, that was I like that there was like food on the desk too.
Yeah, the partially eaten like curry pun.
Yeah, it's really good.
I think the other part on that episode that was cool and made it a really great final episode too was it actually was a job that Kintaro, because of all of his crazy experiences being a production assistant, was actually uniquely qualified to do a great job at. And it's one of those great final episodes of this sort of anthology type thing where it actually does sum up stuff, but in a way that was meaningful. It's like, oh, well, he learned all of these different skills and he knows all of these different people, which is kind of what he's been doing and learning. So it was like, oh, to be an anime, and that's also that very meta of like, to be an anime producer, you have to know every single person, not even in your field, all over the place, and know to make these calls and know to do everything here and how to make this stuff and make people's lives not be horrible, just chain smoking at your desk until you die. So I thought that also was just like a really good set of way to finish out the series as well. And it's also great as well. They just ended it with that. You know, it wasn't like they didn't have the obligatory everyone goes to the beach episode 7. Yeah. It was like, no, this is the end of this thing. It's great. It's done. We did everything we wanted to do here.
Realizing that the screenplay was by the original manga author makes that tying everything together make more sense. That it feels like a self-contained OVA as opposed to trying to contrively cut it at a certain point for that.
Yeah, does anybody know how much more is in the manga that's not in the OVA?
There's quite a bit, I think.
Oh, there's gotta be. I think there's like I think there's like ten or twelve volumes or something.
Ten volumes.
And is like each volume like a storyline or
that I cannot say.
Yeah, I don't know.
I was trying to download it and didn't get there. Interestingly enough, ANN also credits the mangaka with being a key animator on Onimice.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
I'm like, huh, that is very interesting.
I can believe that. I mean, if you're a talented artist, right? Like,
but so many people that are like, because it's not like at that time he wasn't doing stuff. I think he was in the middle of like running a series or two. Like, it's a weird thing to be in there for, but I don't know. So
yeah, it makes you wonder who he knew that called him.
Yeah, because that's clearly what it feels like. Is someone called him up? It's like, oh gosh, we need some key. Can you do something? And he's like, all right, I can do that.
Yeah. Even more interesting to me is the manga actually got a sequel that had a very short run between September 2010 and May of 2011. So quite recent by, you know, I guess our standards. And it was called Golden Boy 2 Sasurai no Obenkyo Yaro Gei no Kai Oabarehen, which translates roughly into Golden Boy 2. You know, the study guys, I guess, like, wild times in the entertainment industry.
Hmm.
I have not read it. It apparently was serialized in Business Jump, and clearly it didn't do too well, or it was intentionally meant to be short, because it only has two tankobons. So.
Hmm. Oh, but that's a thing I wanted to ask on, too, is, yeah, the subtitle under Golden Boys, yeah, the episode is, what is it? Something no Benkyo Yaro. What's the first part of the title of Golden Boy? Oh, Sasurai no Benkyo Yaro.
Yes.
So what I could have G-showed that, but I didn't. Like, what is that? Like, what is that? I'm trying to think exactly of what that really means. Sasurai is wandering. Sasurai is wandering.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like analogous to like saying mayo.
So, okay.
Yeah, like wandering. Sasurai. Yeah.
And then Benkyo Yaro sounds kind of funny. Is like the studying.
Yeah, like it's a very jerk, rough. But yes, it's basically like the study jerk. Yeah, like
study jerk.
Yeah, it's I think it's meant to be like a accusation that he is not an intellectual. He is just a jerk who likes to study. Mm. I believe that's the intonation of it.
I wonder.
Study otaku.
I wonder if that was more of a known term in the mid 90s.
Which one?
Like Benkyo Yaro. Yeah, like it. Like my question is, was that a term that the mangaka came up with for this, or was it an existing term that he used?
Hmm. I mean, I would guess that it's. I'm only guessing, but that it's just kind of the usual pasting of things together to convey a feeling about a thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I have no evidence for that. I'm seeing if there's any evidence in my dictionary. But
the only context I could possibly see is Egawa being born in 61, so that either makes him a younger boomer, or yeah, like a youngish boomer, right? By our standards.
61. No, that's later boom. That's
later boomer.
Not that's late boom, slightly pre X. I think X starts around like 65.
Yeah. He's around. But I don't know. Maybe just the context of somebody of his era, like. Being able to study a lot is like a luxury almost.
Mm.
Like you have to, you know, back then, you know, you kind of, I mean, that was during Japan's booming industrial era. So you kind of had to hit your nose to the grindstone. And, you know, if studying is what got you your success is one thing. But I think in general, a lot of blue collar people perceive studying as like a luxury and something that, you know, only privileged people can do is kind of one way to look at it, maybe.
He's also a guy who studies almost just to study, right? Like he learns to learn, not necessarily to master anything,
be successful. Yeah, like, he just likes.
Yeah, he just wants to learn stuff.
And that is definitely Kintaro.
Yeah, and I could say it almost infers he likes to learn things, but is not necessarily intelligent. Although, it's tough to say. I think he is definitely more capable than he ever lets on, but I hesitate to call him a genius.
I don't know.
I mean, I would say he probably is, but it's definitely he's got some minuses that prevent him from applying that in a long-term focused manner.
As many geniuses do.
Yeah. It honestly wouldn't surprise me if he had, like, ADHD or something, to be honest.
Extreme case of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, clearly he applied himself well enough to pass the Todai entrance exam, which is not nothing.
No, it was quite hard, yeah. Probably less hard in the 90s, but still hard.
But, I mean, if it's law, it's probably still
for sure.
Hard.
Oh, I'm just saying that it's more just, it's the whole idea of, as we go closer into the current era, in industrialized nations, like the, you know, population, the amount of the population that tries to get into higher education goes up, so it, by nature, is more competitive.
True, competition, yeah, fair enough.
Though I wonder how that compares with the declining population.
Yeah,
I was thinking that too. Well, let's see. We are growing near the end here. Did anybody have any thoughts of stuff that we haven't talked about here that they wanted to get in?
I liked episode 3, the one with the virgin who falls
the Udon.
Yeah. I thought it was cool in that it was very low on the. I think it was the low point of perviness. Maybe
it
the last episode
was probably
the
purest episode.
Yeah, and it was well. There, it was one probably had the most well done story. I mean, you could totally tell that the bad guy was a bad guy from the first time you see him, but you know. It's also a strength of just like, yeah, the character design was so good that you see him, you're like, this guy is clearly a bad man. Like,
but credit to the design of the character, Rao. I mean, maybe this is not as great as I'm remembering it, but the change that how they portray the character between the, you know, when he's hiding being a bad guy and when he is a bad guy, I don't know, I really appreciated that. Transparent, I guess, but again, in terms of like readability of characters, I thought they did a really nice job of that.
Yeah, I think that's all my thoughts on this show. I was trying to read the manga, but I couldn't get a source loaded up in time to be able to get there and go. But I'm just curious to read it.
Please find it and report back later. Mike, did you have any thoughts as you were revisiting this?
Thinking that same episode 3 with the scumbag guy also shows Kintaro really hiding his, you know, how much of his power level Kintaro really hides when he lets the guy just totally beat him up and then just takes care of him in like a snap, because of course he went to a dojo and of course he learned from that.
He did. Didn't he give like a almost Goemon line where like, oh, I wasted my.
Yeah. And like he feels bad for using it when it wasn't totally necessary.
That was very. Yeah, that's true. That was very Goemonish of the, you know, what's it? The once again, I've struck a worthless object.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
So I feel like while small, that's a key character moment for him.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I like that episode for that kind of it's another good point in the kind of the roller coaster of expression from 1 to 2 to 3. It's quite the ride. Nick, what about you? Any other interesting things?
Yeah, I actually also have something to say about F3 that I liked is. It also had probably my second favorite gag scene in it, which is when the love interest and Noriko were in like the executive suite at the horse track. Yeah. And he starts to try to, like, you know, seduce her, and Kintaro, you know, being the he basically tries to take it for her, and the guy's thinking like, wow, she's got huge manly hands. Whatever. And he starts to, you know, fiddle around, and Kintaro's like getting like aroused by it.
Yeah.
And then ends up making out with him, and I'm just like, and he never opens his eyes, right? So he doesn't realize what's going on. I'm just like, I was legitimately laughing out loud at that one. That scene was so hysterical to me. And also a good representation of who Kintaro really is. Like Noriko was like really the purest and most innocent character in this entire OVA, probably. So he was just trying to, you know, protect her as much as he could without like overstepping, because, you know, it was a challenging situation, right? Because like this guy is, you know, basically grifting the family, but she legitimately has feelings for him, but he can't just like, you know, tell the truth, because that kind of, you know, well. So it's an interesting dilemma, so like social dilemma for him that I thought he navigated pretty well, honestly.
Yeah, he doesn't want to hurt her feelings by telling her outright that he's a scumbag. He wants him to go away on his own.
Right.
Thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that sexual assault scene was pretty funny.
Yeah.
That's
one way to make sexual assault funny.
It was pretty hilarious. Also with the guy being like, "All right, I'm going to go with the corkscrew, like super suck." It's like it was like a sexual assault battle that was done in a way that was funny, which I think kind of sums up the series of like, it could have been executed terribly and we would never have thought to be like, "Oh, let's give it a try." But we watch it, we're like laughing, we're like, "You know what? It's got high points."
Yeah, yeah. It's definitely still, there are still reasons to watch it today. Like, and I think that's pretty good. It stands the test of time, I would say. As long as you can handle the pervy stuff. This is a high level anime. You have to have a high weeb level to enjoy it. But if you at the proper level, I think you can show this to somebody.
It's also interesting too that I think the weeb level when this came out was much lower than it might be now.
Oh, really? What do you mean?
Like, because like if we watched in like the late 90s, like early 2000s, and you know maybe we're all born at a level 7 weeb level and we just minorly upped ourselves a little bit, but it's one of those shows that feels like Tenchi Muyo or something like that, kind of, where you'd be like, oh man, everyone watched it, and it was like almost like everything that was in OVA in the 90s had like this so much of like the
true
sexual stuff, like all that, those things like that, that these days you might be like, all right, yeah, you can watch it, like it's cool, just be aware that there's a whole bunch of like pretty skeevy stuff in it.
Yeah,
whereas back then you'd be like, oh man, there's some pretty great stuff in it.
Yeah, and that's also the difference between watching in your teens and 20s versus watching in your 40s.
That's a fair point. That could also be part of it,
also
too.
Other parts haven't really aged well past about 2010 or so.
Yeah. But, you know, whereas stuff like Tenchi Muyo, I'm afraid, probably does not hold up. The Golden Boy holds up for the most part.
Yeah.
It's pretty good. Cool. Well, with that, I think we will wrap up this episode. And next episode, we will be doing our third annual awards show of the Kenzokis. So look forward to that. I guess we don't really publish our categories ahead of time, but if you go back and listen to our previous episodes, we're going to do the same one. So if you want to go pick your own for that category, all of our thousands of wonderful listeners out there, Go pick your own for yourself. Don't send them to us because we will disagree with you.
Only our opinions matter, clearly.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, only our opinions matter.
Just get into a hot debate on the subreddit, AMO, Kenzok, r/AMO.
Yeah. Whatever that is, go there and bother them about it. okay, So with that, this is Daimo Kenzaku signing off. Saraba!